Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications. Today, Ed White talks to two American hog industry experts about the potential for international trade wars in pork. Alan Dawson of the Manitoba Cooperator tries to help solve the mystery of how GMO wheat wound up in an Alberta wheat field.
We've had a couple of markets, Japan and South Korea, indicate that they were suspending imports of Canadian wheat.
And Ashley Robinson of Commodity News Service Canada looks at the recent sell-off in the crop markets. That's all on Between the Rows, with this week's host, Ed White.
Hello, and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm Ed White, your host this week. Today we're going to discuss three unsettling situations. Genetically modified wheat has been found in Western Canada, and there have already been repercussions. The crop markets have sold off at a time of the year when they often rally. But first we're going to peer into the soul of a wounded and anxious victim of the present multi-front trade war, the U.S. hog industry. The World Pork Expo was just held in Des Moines, Iowa, and its leaders were reeling from the imposition of tariffs against American pork by China and Mexico. That made U.S. hog farmers the first victims of the war, and they weren't happy. I was down in Iowa for the expo, as were a lot of Manitobans, Ontarians, and Quebecers. I had a chance to speak to quite a few people. One was Nick Giordano, the National Pork Producers Association's International Trade Advocate. Usually, Giordano is lauding the apparent benefits of new and upcoming trade deals, hectoring farmers and industry people to get out and support the deals, and denouncing those who would oppose trade deals. Today, he's playing defense. In the past, he argued, passionately, in favor of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That's dead, at least for the U.S. for now. Instead of new markets opening up for American pork, U.S. pork is being hit with tariffs in Mexico and China. How does an American free trader and pork promoter understand the present situation? This is what he told me.
Our hope is that these trade disputes, you know, whether steel and aluminum or, you know, the China-specific dispute, you know, the NAFTA, that these things, obviously, we want to see them get solved sooner rather than later. The longer this goes on, the harder it gets. But, you know, at this point, I think our producers are, you know, just summing up being patriots. And they're, you know, they're really the ones that are taking the biggest hit here, I think, in the economy. And, you know, most of these, no surprise, most of these people voted for the president. You know, they're taking him at his word that he's got their back. And we're, as I said, communicating often with the administration. And we're working toward and hoping for better news ASAP.
You can tell Giordano was upset and deflated by this reversal of fortune for his export-oriented industry, but he's trying to be hopeful. Here he sums up the feelings.
The administration hasn't quite articulated it this way, but as I see it, we're kind of in a transition from the post-World War II trading system to something different. And, you know, that's something different, and change is always really difficult. Especially when you're, you know, an export-led industry and you've had as much success exporting as the pork industry has had. So it's tough, especially when you're in the middle of this and these trade disputes and being retaliated against.
I also spoke with renowned hog industry and hog market analyst Steve Meyer. He's also trying to be hopeful that these trade wars can be resolved. Here's why.
I've said all along that this all looked like a negotiating strategy to me on the part of a negotiator, okay? That's what our president is. He is by nature a negotiator, okay? This is getting a little far in that process in my mind, you know. But, again, you know, if you go in to buy a new car, one of the things you have to make the guy believe is that you will walk out without buying the new car, okay, if you really want a deal. I still can't rule this out as negotiating posturing. And I think at the end of the day, there's too much at stake here for the country, and I hope the president and his people realize that.
And when are you going to get worried? Like, at what point would you sort of think, okay, this strategy
if they announce isn't... that they're terminating the NAFTA, I'd get really, really scared. Because once you do that, then I don't know how you can walk back from that. I think it's hard to walk back from that. I hope that the president, you know, has, you know, that it is a negotiating strategy, and if a better deal gets put on the table, we throw away what we've been saying and say, that's fine, we'll go on. But, yeah, that's probably, I guess, would be the place where I would say this has gone too far.
He was also able to explain why the Mexican market for U.S. pork won't disappear overnight and why Canadian pork won't automatically replace it.
But I think there's a very good chance that at a 10% tariff, the United States is still the low-cost supplier of hams to a Mexican processor. At 20%, that gets much more shaky. We have this locational advantage, you know, and so even the efficient Canadian plants that want to ship hams down there, they've got to ship them a lot further than we do. So, and if Canada ships them down there, then that takes hams out of the Canadian-U.S. market, and I'm not sure that's really a very much difference, okay? Once you take things out of this pool, you take it out of this pool. And so the big thing is that we're kind of confident that in the short run, you know, this probably doesn't have a big economic impact. Does that mean it's unimportant? Absolutely not. It means it's very important. The analogy would be, you know, if you're in a conflict with somebody and they fire a shot over your head, you know, you're physically okay, but it probably scared the bejeebies out of you. So, yeah. So you know, yeah. And we should, because we need to get this the NAFTA reconciled.
Now we turn to another unsettling issue, genetically modified wheat. Around the world, many consumers don't like the sound of that. It's not supposed to be out there in Canadian fields, but it's being found in one place. And there have already been repercussions. To unpack the situation, I'm now joined by Alan Dawson of the Manitoba Cooperator, who's covered this issue for years. Hello, Alan, and welcome to Between the Rows.
Oh, hi there.
So, Alan, what is the situation right now in the field?
Well, last week, CFIA gave a briefing, you know, explaining that they discovered Roundup Ready genetically modified wheat in Alberta, and since then we've had a couple of markets, Japan and South Korea, indicate that they were suspending imports of Canadian wheat.
And where is this wheat, and where's it growing, and how is it found?
Well, it was found initially by a commercial herbicide applicator who noticed that some wheat that was sprayed with glyphosate didn't die. It was passed on, this wheat was passed on to Alberta Agriculture that did some testing and found indeed it was glyphosate tolerant. And in January, Alberta Agriculture contacted CFIA, which did some lab testing and did find the event, a glyphosate tolerant event from that was belongs to Monsanto in this wheat. It's growing in a remote area along an access road to an oil platform by a field, and it's sort of on the edge of this field, the edge of this road, and apparently about 300 kilometers away from the nearest field where you know, Roundup Ready wheat had been tested, you know, 18 years ago or more. So it's a long ways from you know, where it was tested. And of course, you're probably aware that when they were testing, there was a lot of a strict protocol around preventing that product from escaping those test fields.
So where did this come from?
You know, nobody really knows. CFIA doesn't know. And they may never know, because there were three cases of Roundup Ready wheat found in the United States, 2013, 2014, and 2016, all in the northern U.S., Montana, Oregon, Washington State. And USDA was not able to figure out how those plants of GM Roundup Ready wheat turned up where they did. You know, I guess the suspicion is that somehow that wheat escaped you know, in field trials or from a lab, but nobody's been able to find out how it got from to where it was found.
And what else about this do we not know yet? What are the mysteries still surrounding this thing?
Well, you know, there's a lot. Like, of course, what we just talked about, how did it get to where it was found? But CFIA told us that they haven't been able to identify the wheat that this trait, this event has been found in. And but they say that's not maybe necessarily a bad thing, because even though they don't know the name of the wheat, they've done a DNA fingerprint, so they know the DNA and everything behind it. It just doesn't match up with anything they have in their database. So it's not one of like 450 Canadian wheats that they're familiar with, or other wheats that have that's in their database. So CFIA is saying the good thing about that is it's not a Canadian wheat, and they've done extensive testing, including going to samples collected by the Grain Commission on exports, and have not found that wheat or that trait. So that's good for the commercial business. It means it's very isolated. It's not in our commercial system, not in the seed system. But it raises questions like, how did that event get into that wheat? And CFIA didn't answer questions about that. They might not know. But it leaves people wondering, like, could there be outcrossing? And I've talked to a couple of scientists. One was Rennie Van Acker, used to be a wheat scientist at U of M. Now he's in Ontario, the dean of the agricultural school there, part of the University of Guelph. And he says he believes that this will be this wheat that CFIA hasn't been able to identify will be probably some sort of obscure wheat that Monsanto was working with in the early stages of, you know, doing proof of concept or even just building it up to get something stable that they could work with. Rennie himself had done research on Roundup Ready wheat, and at that time the variety was something kind of a oddly named wheat that was developed by CIMMYT in Mexico, not adapted for Western Canada, but just a mule, a vessel to experiment with the trait. It was called Bob White. This is not Bob White. I checked with CGC, the Grain Commission, and they're aware of Bob White. So it's probably some sort of obscure variety that Monsanto was working with earlier. The other odd thing about this is the trait from Monsanto is one of its earlier traits. They dropped this trait in 2000, didn't do any field testing of it beyond 2000. They were pursuing a couple other traits for commercialization. And so that's another thing. It's probably not been in the environment since, you know, for 18 years. So a lot of questions around this, but I think it's probably the wheat itself is probably an obscure variety that maybe when CFIA starts, you know, talking to Monsanto a bit more about it, they'll be able to identify that wheat.
So we've got a real honest-to-goodness agricultural mystery before us.
Yeah, I think so. It's and, you know, everybody wants to know where it came from. And as I mentioned earlier, USDA wasn't able to, you know, draw a straight line from point A to point B to say this is how it got there, and we might never find out how it got there. The, you know, scientists do say that seeds can be transferred from one location to another by wildlife, you know, geese eating seeds and then defecating somewhere else, or rodents moving seeds around, storing them, that sort of thing. Sometimes seeds, although I wouldn't think a GM seed would get dumped in a pit, you know, disposed of just sometimes, you know, labs are cleaning stuff out. Monsanto, and that's something that Rennie mentioned, that Monsanto had a very strict protocol around their work with GM wheat. He was involved in that. He said they did audits. They counted every seed, you know. It was very tightly controlled. But obviously, it's out there. Only seven plants. and the CFIA is monitoring that site. They've destroyed all the wheat that was there and checked the, you know, the farmers' bins, those sorts of things. It'll be watching that site for 3 years and keeping track of it that way.
Now, for you and me as reporters, this can be academically interesting and scientifically fascinating, but for farmers, there is real money at stake, and this can have an actual effect on the value of wheat. What has tended to happen when GMO wheat has been discovered out there?
Well, in the United States, there was, Japan suspended sales for a while, and a couple other countries stepped up verification process and checking. So there was a bit of a market hiccup. And in fact, I think some farmers, because of that market disruption, sued Monsanto for $2 million back in 2013. And we're seeing, you know, Japan suspended sales from Canada or purchases from Canada as a result of this discovery. South Korea is also blocking some wheat. But I think based on the American experience where there was, you know, three separate cases, the market disruption was short-lived. I mean, we don't want to see any market disruption, but I don't think it's going to be a long-lasting impact that's going to, close our borders to exports of wheat.
Yeah, I guess we're going to find out, right?
Yeah, that's right. It could be completely wrong, but looking at the U.S. example, one wouldn't expect that. Also, CFIA has a test kit developed that can identify this trait and, is offering it to importers if they want to do their own checking. But they did, CGC, Grain Commission, and CFIA have checked thousands of samples of exports from the past 3 years, not finding that wheat or that trait. So I think it bodes well for this being probably a very isolated incident, not like what we saw a few years ago with CDC Trifit that was a genetically modified flax, which was discovered to have contaminated several other varieties. And it took a while to clean that out of the system. I think the system looks like so far it's clean.
Well, thanks very much, Alan, for joining us today to unpack this all.
Thanks to you.
Alan Dawson is a reporter for the Manitoba Cooperator. Now we're joined by Ashley Robinson of Commodity News Service, who's been following this issue in the markets since the news broke. Hello, Ashley, and welcome to Between the Rows.
Hello, Ed.
So what has happened with Canada's customers since the GMO wheat discovery was announced?
Well, on Thursday, of course, was the big day when the announcement happened, and then it started, of course, filtering across the news web and across the internet. And the first reaction we saw was actually on Friday, Japan announced that they were halting their sales, which wasn't too surprising because in the past, as the thing is, Canada hasn't had a GM wheat discovery up until this one, but the States have had some. And when that happened, there's a couple times that happened, and one of the times that happened, South Korea and Japan both halted their sales because they're very food-conscious countries, and one of the things that their people require and that they do, their governments, is that they want things to conform to their standards. And then we didn't have any other news, of course, over the weekend, but on Monday there was more news when South Korea halted their sales of Canadian wheat and flour.
So how substantial is that? Like, is that, a huge amount of wheat going now, or is this just something that could be a problem if this situation isn't cleaned up fast?
Well, of course, we are we're getting towards the end of the last year's season for the crop year, of course, because we are well into our into planting and seeing, well, we're past planting and everything here in Western Canada. So it's not too much of an effect right now. And when you're looking even at the numbers, these aren't huge places that are buying large amounts of Canadian wheat. But the thing is, they like to pay a premium for the wheat. So we actually are getting quite a bit of money from these countries. And if this doesn't get wrapped up fast enough, and we are dragging on a few months into the future, when we are looking to sell that crop that's currently sitting on the fields across Western Canada, we could be in trouble.
And is this affecting sales and prices of wheat on the Canadian prairies?
Not right now, but Canada really needs to go into major damage control mode. On Friday, I was talking with a Camdall with the Cereals Canada and stuff, and he was saying that they were going to be reaching out to the international markets and trying to reassure them that this was a very, very isolated incident, and this doesn't reflect at all on the Canadian wheat. It is important that we have to get that message out to our international markets. It's just, if we don't get it wrapped up fast, then it really could affect the crop that we have on the fields right now when we go to try to sell it.
And are you able to see any sort of an impact in the futures markets out there?
Not really right now. I know last week, of course, we did see four spot sales. They were down, but that, of course, also plays into what we're seeing for weather right now on the across Western Canada.
Now let's turn to something that might be even more disturbing for a lot of growers, and that is the big sell-off in the crop futures markets. Ashley, what the heck is going on?
Well, I think everyone can maybe just has an idea what's going on. There's just one word: Trump. So of course, across the news networks and everything, and across all the businesses right now, we're seeing the words trade war. And so last week we saw the U.S. put tariffs on China imports, and then China fired back with more tariffs. And that was when soybeans were implicated at the end of last week, which, of course, sent soybean markets down. And then that has a ripple effect across all commodity markets. And then late Monday, we saw the U.S. put even more tariffs on Chinese imports. So it's just going back and forth, and it is sending the commodity markets into a spiral.
Yeah, I usually think of this time of year as, you know, ultimate weather markets period, and it's normally when you expect little rallies, not significant sell-offs, and it's quite odd to see on the charts this big slide we've sort of gone through.
Mm-hmm. It's insane, and definitely more at this time of the year. We're normally sitting around paying attention to the weather because, of course, in North America, we are in the midst of our growing season. So this is normally not what we're paying attention to when it comes to the markets.
Now, some crops have really sold off, but canola has been relatively very strong compared to other crops. What are you hearing about why that is?
Well, there's a few things, of course. The one thing is canola is a Canadian market, and we're not the U.S., which is good for us right now. There's a few things playing into, of course, why canola is doing a bit better. It has been down, though, which we should note. But the Canadian dollar has been weaker, which is providing some support for canola as it's making the crop cheaper on the international marketplace, which, of course, makes it more enticing. Plus, of course, with the whole soybeans being caught up in the trade war between China and the U.S. means that it looks like China isn't going to be buying as much soybeans from the U.S., which they normally do. So traders are thinking that we're going to see other oil seeds instead of soybeans being bought, which could mean that China could be buying some Canadian canola, which is helping our market here.
And right now, what are you most carefully watching in the markets?
Well, of course, I mentioned before the weather, which is no matter what time of year, we're watching the weather somewhere in the world. And so right now, of course, we're watching it here at home. And heading into the planting season, it was very dry, and everyone thought that was going to be the real story we're going to be paying attention to, which was going to prop up the markets, and we're going to see a bit higher prices. However, over the last few weeks, we've seen some rain across Western Canada, which has put some pressure on the markets. But there are still some dry patches. We're seeing in southwestern Saskatchewan, it's pretty dry, and I see on Twitter and stuff, farmers from that area are really praying for rain. Southern Alberta is another place that they're also really praying for rain. We also saw at the end of last week some hail and strong winds go through the southwestern Manitoba, southeastern Saskatchewan area, and there is still reports coming in of just how much damage there was to crops, so that is having an effect on the market. So definitely, of course, heading into the future, we're going to be paying attention to the weather throughout the whole growing season, and of course, we're also going to be paying attention to what Trump is up to and what he's tweeting.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Ashley.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Ashley Robinson is a reporter with Commodity News Service. That's all for this week. Join us next week for another edition of Between the Rows, when we'll bring you more insight into the stories the reporters within Glacier Farm Media are covering. I'm Ed White, and I was pleased to be your host this week.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.